Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing step 8 and 9, part 1. Next week, we're going to do steps 8 and 9, part 2. So one comes before two. And please help me welcome our panelists. We have Katie and Grant. So we're going to start off on page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Katie?
Thanks. My name's Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I want to thank David and the group for asking me. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I kind of chuckled at the beginning of that where it says, now we need more action, you know, because before this, my first time through the steps, I looked at 4 and 5, lots of action, and I'm a perfectionist. And so when you give me a notebook and columns, you know, I break out rulers and white out and everything has to be perfect. And I was so afraid that if I left something off the list, any of the lists, that that thing would jump out of the bushes and get me drunk as I left my sponsor's house after the fifth step. And so I spent months and months and months, painful months on the fourth step. And then when I finally did my fifth step, it took about 2 days. And I laugh because, you know, it says now we need more action right after six and seven, I didn't think of six and seven as action steps. I thought those were like, go home, sit quietly for a little bit, like rest, like kind of like a pause. And then we go into some more action. Like everybody needs a little bit of rest among all this action that we're doing here. And it has taken me a long time to learn just how much action goes into six and seven. You know, that is where I spent a lot of my time trying to learn how to be different and to ask my higher power to help me to change my old behaviors, you know, the behaviors that I saw in eight and nine, because, you know, my sponsor made clear to me that now this more action, when I go out and I try to, repair the damage done in the past, I don't want to be the same person standing there. You know, if I'm going to make amends to you, I don't want to be a person that's going to take your wallet during that interaction. And there was a point in my life that I would have been. And so, you know, I think as painful as that process leading up to this was for me the first time through, something I didn't realize was happening, and that was that I was changing. You know, I was learning how to be different by just trying to live differently through the steps that came before this. You know, I sat down last night with my first, fourth, and fifth step and my eighth and ninth step because I still have them, and I looked through them, and, you know, as I did my fifth step, there are A's underneath the names of the people that my sponsor's like, you might own amends to that person, you know, and then at the end of my fourth step, my second fourth step notebook, there's a list of names that I went back and I made from everything that had an A on it on my fourth step. And something that stuck out to me as I was looking through all that is, you know, through each step of that process where I made the eighth step list with my sponsor, you know, we weeded some people out, or we identified people as, you know, maybe that's a living amends, or I make amends to, you know, my ex-boyfriend's mother by making amends to him and then leaving their family alone. I had a lot of those, interestingly enough. And, you know, that my job, my sponsor made clear to me, my job here is that I'm just there to clean up my side of the street. You know, I'm attempting to sweep away the debris that's accumulated out of my effort to live on self-will and run the show myself. And it was, you know, I don't know that I got it right away, but when we talk about the fourth step, you know, those are the common manifestations of self, you know, resentment, fear, and sex. And that, those are the areas that I can most easily see myself trying to manage and control the outcomes of my life, even still sometimes. And she pointed out to me that there's a prayer here for the eighth step that, you know, if I don't have the will to do this, if I'm not willing to make amends to somebody, I'm supposed to pray until that comes. And, you know, she had a way of having me put the eighth step together, first a list and then like index cards for each amends that I owed that had specific pieces to it. And one of those was willing or not willing, and not willing was like a negative. And then when I became willing, I could turn it into a positive. And I had some that I wasn't willing to do. And, she had me saying that prayer, and this was definitely a place, you know, I had sponsors when I asked them to sponsor me say, are you willing to, do you think you're an alcoholic? Are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And will you pass this on to somebody else? And that second question, well, actually the first two questions, but the second question came up a lot in eight and nine for me. Remember when you said you were willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? This is any lengths. And I had to be reminded of that a lot. So I'm always glad when I see it in this context, especially in italics, because it's super important. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Katie.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
Wow. You nailed it. And while you were talking, Katie, I was reminded of the first thought I had after I completed my seventh step for the first time. I'm a complete fraud. My whole life up until this point was not honest. It didn't mean anything. Nothing I had done to this point had built up to anything other than burned bridges. That's the point I had reached. And I wasn't exactly excited about the fact that now I had to go back and meet with other people who I had harmed to get freedom from that sense of a fraudulent life. That was devastating. And I asked my sponsor, my first sponsor, So, if I feel like a fraud, isn't that just enough pain right there? Do I have to go experience any more pain? And he said, what if you experienced a little bit of pain, and in return, you had freedom from that sense that your life was now worthless? And then we left from that point. We stopped. We didn't go any further. And I went back and did what Katie just described. I approached this eight-step prayer. I asked for strength and willingness to go forward, because I did want to go to any lengths, but I was afraid. I was afraid what any lengths might look like. I wasn't sure that I had the courage to do what I've seen other people do. And it was the first time in my life I had to actually ask myself, what is courage? And then I heard it shared, like anything in AA, I asked myself that, and then like 2 days later I'm at a meeting and I hear somebody share, you know, courage isn't a lack or absence of fear. It's being able to go into those fearful situations and to go through them and grow from those experiences. And for me, that was a starting point to trying to do what we're going to talk about going forward in the eighth step, and then ultimately in the ninth step. Because I thought if I just made this list of all these things and just became aware of where I was wrong and, you know, talked to my higher power and got his approval that I could be relieved of it, that I would be okay, right? But thankfully I had a pretty good sponsor at that time who was willing to say, I think we need to do a little more work, because you won't really have trust. You really won't have faith in that higher power if you don't do this work. And the truth is that struggle, that internal struggle with fear and anxiety and angst, pushed me to do this work. I didn't understand it at the time. I thought it was trying to keep me from doing this work. But it really did push me forward, because if I hadn't had that internal struggle, I wouldn't have had a reason to want to get better. Because there was all these other outside circumstances that had gone away because I wasn't drinking. So I didn't have to suffer other consequences that I was expecting to come down the road. But now I had to live with myself. And that's some place I don't like to be by myself. This thing up here, when it gets rolling by itself, you know, I've heard it said, you know, the gerbil in the cage just running and going. I've heard my favorite, which is, I'm in unsupervised territory. You know, I need adult supervision and I don't have it. And that's where a higher power comes into play. So self will run riot needs to be eliminated. Only way I can do that is to turn that life and that thought process over to a higher power. And it starts with learning about humility. I of myself cannot bring about humility, but this practice that's outlined in this book, in this part of this book in particular for me, is where I get to experience humility for the first time, rather than humiliation, which is all I knew of humility coming in the door. Thanks for sharing.
All right. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we looked over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. Some people we need not, and probably should not, emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in our demonstration of goodwill rather than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Katie, alcoholic.
Katie.
I really like this paragraph because, you know, it tells me what my purpose is. You know, my entire life, I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing here, you know. And the way that that looked for me was I like to be the center of attention. I like, you know, I'm loud. I don't sit quietly in the corner ever. And so I ran around like a bull in a china shop trying to find my purpose, trying to find where I fit. You know, I had, I remember I started drinking when I was 13 and I got sober when I was 17. And in that period, I developed like multiple personalities, literally to the extent I got diagnosed with it once. Because I would just go into a situation and I would, you know, who do you need me to be for you to like me? That's all I wanted. Like, what do I have to do to get your approval? And so, you know, I'd have my sports friends and I'd have my, you know, school and like honors classes friends. And then I had my friends who I drank with. And then, you know, I started to have different kinds of friends the longer I drank. And I remember being 16 and my mom throwing me a surprise birthday party. And the big surprise was that she pulled people from all of these groups and put them in the same place. And I didn't know how to act. I didn't know how to act because I realized there was this mirror in front of me that I was different with all of them. And I didn't know how I fit in the world, and I didn't know how to be. So I responded with what I considered to be a universal emotion, anger, and was just mad and horrible the whole party. I had to leave and then come back because I just couldn't handle being there. And, you know, and so I come here, and I'm just beaten by alcohol, and I don't want to have to live the way that I'm living anymore. The yets are not what scare me. Like, go ahead and get a DUI yet. Like, because I'm just the type of alcoholic, if it hasn't happened to me, it's never going to happen to me, you know? It was the agains. It was having to live that way again and go back to that place again and the emptiness and the void. And, you know, I really, when I got here, wasn't all that concerned about what's my purpose. I was like, I just don't want to have to drink anymore. But by the time I got to this point in the book, you know, like what was shared, my life is looking a little bit better. I got back in school. I'm kind of moving in the direction that normal people seem to be moving. But I still didn't really have any anchors or tethers other than, like, AA is my home base and I'm here and this is my safe place in the world. You know, and through working the eighth step with a sponsor, I started to see, like, my job is to just fit myself to be of maximum service. I don't have to go out and be of maximum service. That's really not my business. That's my higher power's job, is to show me how and where I'm to serve. My job is to fit myself. And if I am the type of person who cannot go places because I can't look people in the eye because of how I've treated them, I'm not really fit to serve in those places. And I don't know, and I've seen over and over again as I practice the 12 step, I don't know where I'm going to be helpful. I don't know, you know, when I'm going to be called on to share my experience, strength, and hope with someone. And I don't want, because of my own behavior, to not be able to do that. You know, and I remember a situation where I was a couple of years sober. I had done this the first time, and, you know, this woman had started dating this guy in the program who I had previously dated, and she made that clear to me, and my mind went blank. And then I got home later, and it filled back up with, like, you know, why is he still calling me then? And I got all like, oh, I'm going to call her, and I'm going to tell her what's up. And I had this thought, like, the next thought that I had was, I don't want to do or say anything that if this woman needed my help, she would hesitate to call me. Because of how I acted out of my selfish and self-centered fear, you know, and my feelings of inadequacy. And that lesson has stuck with me, you know, and I learned it, I think, the first time in this process, which is, you know, I'm just trying to clear away what's blocked me from my higher power so that I can hear, you know, that, I guess, call or whatever, that I can hear the message when it's time for me to be of service, and I can act on it when I hear it. You know, and the other quick thing I'll say about this is I love this paragraph because it tells me that me and the amends that I'm going to make to someone, you know, it has nothing to do with me. It's not about my experience and making them understand my sobriety and what I'm trying to do. It is about trying to set right the wrong. And whatever they need out of me to do that, that's what I need to give. I don't need to talk about God. If it's, you know, I had some friends that would not have at all been receptive to that. But, you know, paying back the money and telling them that I didn't treat them the way they deserved to be treated was a lot more effective in those situations. And so, you know, this was kind of where I started to work through that with my sponsor. Like, how should I approach this person? You know, how would I like to be approached if I was them? You know, and I started really thinking about other people as something more than just, you know, role players in my life, you know, actors in my story, as actual true individuals, you know, had their own feelings and desires that, you know, at this point I definitely had bulldozed over. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I got out of that paragraph. Thanks.
Yeah, so when I first read this paragraph, I had to go get a dictionary because there's some words here I didn't understand. But the one word from the dictionary that I found the most helpful to seeing why I needed to move forward was the word diffident. I thought diffident was just like, sort of like I'm an angry, just against you kind of person. And the truth is by dictionary definition, it's a lack of self-confidence. So I don't want to do this because I have no self-confidence. And then I asked my sponsor at that time, I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, do you understand the concept of self-esteem? And I said, I think so. How do I get some of that? And he said, well, you have to engage in esteemable acts. So now I'm totally perplexed. But the answer to what esteemable acts is at the end of the sentence, spiritual basis. I have to go to these people on a spiritual basis. Not on a, well, I'm going to clean up this mess and I'm going to just move on attitude, but actually on a basis of love and tolerance and maybe even a little consideration for that other person, and being able to admit that I'm wrong in some situations, not just say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to trip over your feelings. I actually didn't take the time to even consider them, and I was wrong in doing that. And that took me some time to understand, because I definitely did a few amends early on where my sponsor told me I had to say I was wrong, but it was still that attitude like, well, oops, sorry. And I had to learn that that wasn't the attitude I needed to approach this with. And those amends I've had to go back and make again, as it goes on to talk about in this paragraph, like we'll have multiple approaches with some people. Some people will just bias them away, or at the time that we try to approach them, they're not ready to hear what we have to say. So we just have to work to prepare ourselves for a future opportunity. But I've had some amends where I've had to make an amend and then make the amend again for different reasons, because I found deeper into that relationship that there was some other part of the relationship I had broken with my actions. And so I have the opportunity to continue to focus my efforts and readdress those things. Mm. Now, all that being said, because this is a continuous process, I have relationships today that I still have to go back and make amends for, and that I'm not particularly good at demonstrating goodwill. That I kind of come at it with a, well, I'm spiritually better than you, so you're just going to have to accept that I'm wrong and you have a part in it. So that's where this is a continuous process. And if I don't work on those things, I don't get better. And if I don't get better, I start moving back towards insanity. And if I move back towards insanity, I either drink or I try to kill myself. And that's kind of a simple set of understandings that I can look at and say, okay, I will work on trying to carry a beneficial message. Beneficial message. A message that's useful to other people, not just useful to me. And, you know, being able to fit ourselves with maximum service. I remember hearing this in a meeting once. It's the great cosmic babysitting gig. I give God my alcohol obsession, and he gives me the responsibility of his children to take care of. And you know what? Some days I just don't want to take care of other people's children. But I have to. Because if I don't, then I'm just asking for my self-will and my alcoholic obsession back. You know, that's the trade-off. And truthfully, it's not that difficult. In fact, it's not as hard as living a life in an alcoholic haze. But I just want things my way sometimes, and that's where the struggle often happens. So it's a blessing that it's on paper, that I can always go back to somebody else and say, hey, something seems to be awry, and I've been doing these things, and how do I get out of my own way? And then they can point me in the direction of these simple actions and prayer and meditation and finding another alcoholic to help, and to even say, hey, I have a role in this, and be honest about that role in it and be willing to have it removed, and then also face that other person with dignity and love and tolerance and admit to them that I was wrong and move through that process rather than building up more and more and more and more painful shame. That's all I do. I just go through the world chaotically damaging stuff, and then I just build all this shame and guilt and remorse and just wait for it to destroy me or run me down. But the thing is if I catch these things as they come up and work at them one at a time, after having kind of cleared away a whole bunch of them at one point, I keep checking in on them and keep moving them out of the way. I don't have to go back to that crazy stockpile of shame and remorse and just terrible, terrible guilt. So, yeah, it's a new life in exchange for this alcoholic obsession. That's what we've been offered. Thanks.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve a good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he's done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Yeah, so, you know, I chuckled at this because, I hate making amends to people I don't like. And having to do that has kept me from doing and saying so many things in sobriety, because I am like obstinately like, I will be damned if I have to make amends to that person. I'm just not going to act on this because I don't want to have to go back and clean it up, and I know I will have to. And doing this the first time kind of instilled that in me. It's not 100% since then, but it has been a very powerful motivator because I don't like it. I will say, you know, on that first part about we don't shy away from the subject of God, and, you know, we're willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. Like, I had some people who I drank with, not necessarily when I went back and made amends, but they showed back up later with questions. Mm-hmm. you know, some very, very soon after I made the amends, you know, 20 minutes later, some years later called and, you know, what happened to you, you know, and those were the opportunities that I found to announce my convictions with tact and common sense. And what that looked like is a lot what this looks like, just sharing my experience openly as if I would share it to any other alcoholic. And the fact that I had made the amends and had been willing to do that enabled me to share with them as if they were just any other human being, you know, because it cleared away all the stuff that had been between me and them. And, you know, when it came down to the people I didn't like, you know, yeah, I got a better attitude toward them through seeing my mistakes on the fourth step. I saw that maybe I hadn't handled things well, but I had a hard time focusing. You know what it says in the fourth step? Like, we look at our mistakes, we disregard the other person entirely. I had a very hard time disregarding the other person entirely, you know, because there were certain people in my life that's like, yeah, I got a part, but you got a part too. And your part, if you ask me, is a lot bigger than my part. So I'm here to clean up that, but, you know, I'm kind of waiting. And that's kind of how I envisioned this in my head when I first got to it. And, you know, even that, I have it underlined. The question of how we approach the man we hated will arise. Like, I remember when I read that, just, like, this overwhelming, like, resistance. Like, no. Immediately coming up when we got there. Another place where I had to be reminded that I said I would go to any lengths to stay sober. And my sponsor told me that you know, that's an important part of leveling my pride and ego. You know, if I want to stop running the show, if I want to stop being, you know, that actor who's trying to manage and control the outcomes of my life, like, this is a really important part of that. And that sometimes I just have to do it. And it's going to be harder to go to someone I dislike than someone who's a friend. Usually for me, because I'm afraid of the outcome. You know, if I go to a friend, I'm pretty sure they're going to forgive me and we'll be able to move forward. And I didn't really have any experiences where someone I was close with, you know, I was less close with after making an amends. But I had a lot of fear of what it would be like to go back to someone I swore I would never speak to again. And it was hard. And one of the things that my sponsor had me do to prepare for that was to say the sick man prayer out of the fourth step, to pray for those people. She gave me kind of a combination. Well, you know, over the years, the sponsors that I've had have kind of mushed that and the prayer from Freedom from Bondage, where I pray for that other person. You know, and I think the thing in that I found the most helpful was that phrase, like me. You know, he, like me, is spiritually sick. How am I like this person? Because with people I don't like, or with people, and, you know, I had people on my fourth step that when I got to my mistakes, it was in the moment I hadn't done anything wrong, but I used that as an excuse to hurt people after that. You know, but that was really, honestly, and I believe it through sponsorship, the best that I, you know, the only thing I really did with that experience and the only mistakes that I had made was how I had used it after the fact. You know, and I found so much freedom in that simple phrase of finding out how I was like the people that I didn't like. Could I see, you know, how I might have thought or reacted the same way, you know, that I suffer from the same fear that they suffer from, you know, my sponsor. And with my mother, that was a huge resentment. You know, her part, 5 pages. My part, 2 paragraphs, you know. And she, you know, my sponsor started me on that in the fifth step, where she stopped and she said, you know, tell me a little bit about your mother's childhood and what that was like. And I started down the road, and it was, you know, long story short, it was a lot worse than mine, a lot worse, you know. And she looked at me and she goes, don't you think she did the very best she could with what she'd been given? You know, and she opened that door for me. And so with the people that I didn't like, that was, you know, if I wasn't willing to make amends to them, or I was going to go to it and say, like, yeah, okay, I was wrong here, and, you know, but don't go over here, because that might open a whole can of worms that I'm not willing to say I was wrong about. You know, she had me stay on that for a period of time and really work on that and pray for those people so that I could take the bit in my teeth and do it in that helpful and forgiving spirit. From a place of neutrality. I don't have to like you to make amends to you. I don't have to talk myself into accepting the things that you've done, you know, but forgiveness isn't about agreeing and saying, oh, no, that was fine. It's about, you know, letting go of that stuff and, you know, being able to confess that former ill feeling and expressing my own regret for the way that I handled it. And when I've been able to do that, the freedom from that has just been incredible. So thanks.
Yeah, I mean, the couple things that jumped out at me is, as you were reading, is the word we don't use this as an excuse. The spiritual aspect is the this. I like to find any excuse not to do anything. So the opportunity to say, well, it says up here, I can't talk about this spiritual thing, and I'm not sure I can do this without spiritual help, so I don't know if I can do this. My sponsor was kind enough to point out that you just don't have to talk about God when you go to do your amends. You can talk to God prior to and after, but you don't have to sell the other person on God, which made it a little bit easier. The other thing that struck me in this paragraph, or I should say when I did my first aid step, I had to make a separate column for, was, are you a friend or an enemy? And I came to find out many people who you would expect to be friends were enemies, like my parents. I had lost perspective on what my relationship to other people was, and that I had named friends who were probably enemies because they had taken advantage of me and taken money from me and done all kinds of terrible stuff, and I thought that they were my friends. And my sponsor helped me understand that maybe who I think is looking out for my best interest is probably not who I think is looking out for my best interest. So that was the first opportunity to change in perspective. I found that in looking at who was friends and enemies, I also was able to kind of try this on for size and go to the people who was like, well, that person doesn't seem too bad, so I can try to make an amends to them. And kind of just practice going through what my sponsor told me to do in terms of an amends with somebody who, at the end of it, was generally less likely to be crazy upset with me. So that when I did finally go and make amends to my mom, for example, who I at the time thought I was ready, but still wasn't really that ready to make an amends, I didn't lay out all of her faults in that amends. I still held on to them, but I didn't sit there and badger her and beat her over the head with her faults, because, like was said, my mom did the best she could with what she had. And that was a great point for me to understand that I don't have to get anything back from these people when I make these amends. That all I have to do is get right-sided of myself, just clear away what I had done. Because there was a few other amends that I had to make to people who, they violated me. They violated my trust. They violated what I was as a person. And I felt fully the victim going into it. And my sponsor pointed out, it's time to stop living a life of victimhood. It's time to start just living an honest life. And so when I went to make those amends helped me tremendously in understanding that I had victimized other people. And that helped me move forward with making amends that I thought I wasn't ready to make. Because I acquired a better attitude, not just towards any one person, but all people. It was not something I produced in myself. It was just, I did this action, and somehow a higher power came in and said, hey, check this out. You can feel better now. You can feel relieved now. And after having done this a couple times and made several amends, I had started to work with some alcoholics in understanding prayer a little deeper. And this last part of, in this paragraph, you know, we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regrets. We came to understand together as a group that part in the Our Father, forgive us our trespasses, as we would have others forgive us. So basically, I would get forgiveness from God, right? Based on the amount of forgiveness I can give to other people. My freedom of my pain and suffering is contingent on how much freedom or compassion I can give to another person who suffers in the same way that I do. And I really liked what you said about bringing in that four-step prayer. Because I often will say that prayer in a moment just thinking about how sick they are and not remembering that I am like them too in that moment. And I need that same level of forgiveness. And that's freeing when I can really recognize it. And it helps me to know that I can be a part of this world with other people. Thanks.
Isn't this a great meeting?
We're going to continue on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do, his faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It shouldn't matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
Okay. Yeah. So I like to argue. I like it so much I made it a career. And it's so I laugh. You know, we don't get to criticize or argue with people during amends. And that, you know, that took practice. A lot of that came through the living amends with the people in my life that, like, you know, I would call my sponsor in early sobriety because I lived with my parents. And, you know, she just, God bless her, over and over again, would try to get me to stop arguing, you know, to just stop needing to be right, you know, and realize that I'm never going to get over my drinking unless I do my utmost to straighten out the past. And part of that was to, you know, be a better daughter. And, you know, it was definitely my experience when I went back and I made amends. You know, I was told, don't ever make an amends without talking to somebody first. And usually my sponsor, because she knows the whole story by that point. And so I really, you know, we talked a lot about how to be calm and frank and open. Mm-hmm. You know, what I, you know, and she had me do some things. You know, I wrote out what I thought I was making amends for on my little card, and then I had to talk to her about it, and she would help me, you know, edit. Because sometimes I like to say too much. Sometimes I wouldn't want to say enough. But she also had me do something I'm so grateful for. You know, have I left anything out? You know, before I get to the part of what can I do to make this right, I was supposed to ask them, have I left anything out? And like what was shared, you know, I really learned how I had hurt other people. And it quite often was not in the way that I thought I had. You know, I thought I stole your money. You probably didn't like that. I should go pay your money and say I'm sorry. You know, I thought, you know, like maybe hitting my parents, probably not so good. You know, I didn't realize what it meant to steal someone's emotional security. And I did that in a lot of different ways. You know, and when I have gone and been frank and open and calm and had that sincere desire to set right the wrong, I'm in a a state where I can hear that from them, and I don't have to rationalize it, I don't have to justify it, I don't have to defend it, because I've already been told what to say next. I was wrong. You know, I was wrong to do that to you. You didn't deserve to be treated that way. What can I do to make it right? You know, and I definitely had this experience where I had, you know, feuds of years standing melt away, you know, where I had been, I like to be, you know, jealous of other women. That was a big thing, you know, and being able to sweep that aside and see how we were both afraid of one another and, you know, to move forward from there. You know, I had people, when I said, you know, what can I do to make it right? They told me to stay out of their lives. And there was an extra few words in there that I'm not going to say here and hang up on me, you know. You know, I remember that immense in particular, calling my sponsor in tears. And she said, you know, you did what you were told to do. And if that's where that person is with that, you know, you can pray for them. And that their reaction is not your responsibility. You know, and one thing that I saw over and over again, former enemies, all kinds of people, what they would say to me when I said, what can I do to make it right? Probably 98% of the people I made amends to said, keep doing what you're doing. Whatever it is that you're doing, keep doing that. And, you know, when I talk about the ninth step, you know, I'd be remiss not to mention that, because that's when my sobriety and my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous stopped being about me. Just about me getting better and what can I get out of this and, oh my God, I'm so sick. You know, make me better. Still like that sometimes. But, you know, me being here, me participating in this, me reaching out my hand to the next alcoholic, me trying to live by spiritual principles. I had people who, you know, there are debts I will never be able to repay as long as I live. There are things that I have said to people I love and care about I can never take back. They asked me to do this. They asked me to keep doing this, and they didn't put an expiration date on it, you know? And so that, to me, opened up the process of making amends and, you know, making this more than just about me trying to get mired, you know, out of the mud, allowed me to see other people and be available to other people, which in turn made me so much more effective when I got to the 12th step. Because it's not just about me anymore, you know. It became about them, and it became about setting that right, and then it became about, what do I need to do to stay here? You know, how can I pass this thing on? How can I be of service? You know, and that opened up Alcoholics Anonymous for me in a way, you know, that it hadn't been before. Because I was just coming here, what can you give me? And I want to be a GSR, you know. I don't want to make the coffee. I don't like cleaning the cigarette, you know, ashtrays. I would do those things begrudgingly, but I became more willing to be of service and more willing to give of myself because I saw in the ninth step the benefits of that. So, thanks.
Thank you. 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. And right before that, it says, if we're calm, frank, and open, we'll be gratified with this result. Gratification. That's all I want in life is gratification. I just want it to be instant gratification, right? And this gratification is not by means of me determining the results. This is gratification by me showing up and playing by the rules that my higher power sets. And then I get gratification. I can't determine the results. And it talks further in this paragraph, this next paragraph, about, you know, made our demonstration. That's it. It's not about I made the demonstration and then I got them to see my side of things. I got them to agree with what I thought was the right way to live. It's just I made my demonstration and that's the end of it. And whatever the result is the result that my higher power set out for that situation. So I wasn't too excited about this at first because I like to be in control of the results. Mm. I like to live in a world where I'm in charge of the results. I'm in charge of the outcomes. And I had to learn to live in a world where my higher power runs the show and I'm his agent. I just show up and do the work. I do the legwork. And some days are better than others. I am experiencing currently in sobriety the pain of not following my higher power's direction and taking back the results and trying to run my life the way that I think it should be run. I'm not going insane and going out and drinking on it because I'm doing these simple actions. I was reading through this yesterday and I kind of came to the understanding that as I was rereading through my notes and in this chapter, that these are simple acts of faith. If I just take acts of faith and trust my higher power, I will be free of resentments and fear and self-degradation and insecurity and remorse. I will be freed of all those things because I'm not trying to run a show. It's that simple. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's see. We're right out of time, I think. We'll do these last two paragraphs, and if you guys want to do a minute or two, that'd be great. Page 78, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. That's extraordinary. Most alcoholics owe money. That's true. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
So I will say this quickly about financial amends. You know, getting sober at 17, I actually had a lot of financial amends because I'm a thief. But I had never paid a bill in my life. I didn't know anything about financial responsibility. And this is an area where Alcoholics Anonymous raised me. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a financially responsible adult. I learned how to pay bills by making my financial amends because there were very few of them that I could just go in and make. You know, I stole a lot of stuff from stores. I was going through my cards last night. Take money. You know, like my approach, like go in person plus take money. You know, $40, $20, whatever. But there were some other amends, like employers, because I think the cash drawer is like supplement to my paycheck, that I owed a lot of money. And I had to walk into my place of employment with $30 and say, I think I owe you about 100 times this. Can I make payments? And in my mind, what I wanted to do was go to a bank, get a loan, walk in with an envelope, slam it down on the counter, and be done with it. I wrote that man a check every 2 weeks for 2 years. And like a month before I was about to come into enough money to pay off what I thought I owed him, I got a card in the mail saying, we've moved, here's our new address, please don't send us any more money. Thank you for always being on time with the checks. And I was like, seriously? You know, it was amazing. And, you know, I learned how to pay bills on time by making my financial amends. You know, and on the guiding principles, you know, again, I'm reminded that I decided at the beginning of this that I was willing to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. And it harkens back to how it works here when it says we must not shrink at anything, because half measures will avail me nothing. If I'm not willing to do this, I don't get half sobriety. I don't get a little bit of relief, you know, like what's been shared. I have to live with myself. And if I'm not willing to clean away one thing, that one thing is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I've experienced that in sobriety when I have taken back the reins and I have tried to live on self-will and the consequences of that. Even when I have been active in AA and service and sponsoring other women and in constant contact with my sponsor working on prayer and meditation, when I've had one area of my life where I'm like, no, no, God, I'm doing all this for you over here, so you should give me what I want over here, I was miserable. It didn't matter how much I did, you know, and that principle guided me through this ninth step. And again, there's now, you know, what my sponsor called the ninth step prayer. I asked to be given the strength and the direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. You know, I was afraid to go make those financial amends to all those stores. I thought somebody's going to send me to jail, you know. And by the end, if I needed to pick me up, I would go make financial amends to stores because they were telling me I should go on Oprah and like be a poster child for some, I don't even know what. But those ended up being a lot easier than I thought they were going to be, you know. But I was afraid, and I did it anyway, you know. And I got relief. And when I'm not willing to do that in this or in any area of my life where I have run the show and created chaos, you know, I pay a big price for that. So thanks.
I'll just say one little quick thing is, like Kay just said, is making these amends taught me how to be responsible in my life going forward. Some of my amends, I got lucky. I got blessed. I went in expecting to pay a whole lot of money for stuff that I had stole, procured, or otherwise confiscated from the job environment, only to have my employer say, well, you know, we probably took advantage of you too a little bit, and, you know, we'll just call it even. I don't know how that happened other than I just did this and I got relieved of that responsibility. So I've learned to take that as an opportunity for a living amends. So now when I have an opportunity to give back to somebody else, I try to carry that forward, right? Like that I learned a lesson from that. And now today when I'm faced with financial struggles or financial turmoil, rather than taking the decision to go spend money in areas I probably shouldn't, I just focus that financial responsibility to where it belongs. And that's part of what this lesson has taught me today. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to pass the seven for this basket. Seven tradition states that every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences, which might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Grant?
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
My home group's North Suffolk Big Book, Tuesday night, 7 p.m., 1885 Bridge Road in Suffolk. Speaker for this coming month, the first Tuesday of every month, is a speaker meeting. Speaker for this coming month is Iran P., which many of you know, so come out. If nothing else, at least laugh a lot. And then at the end of this month, the 28th of August, we're having a workshop. It's a Sunday at 2 o'clock. Common Wisdom Protects Our Heritage. It's going to be a presentation on the traditions. We'll have Harmony, Buster, H, Jake B, and Ellen B all as our speakers. There'll be food provided, bring your own desserts, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Thanks.
Awesome. Any other announcements? This group right here in this room on September 19th is having a supper and a speaker. There'll be a 6 p.m. potluck, and 7 o'clock, Billy H. from Madison, Virginia is going to come and tell his story. And if you come up front, you'll find these orange flyers. If we could just ask your help, if you want to grab a couple, take them back to your home groups, help us get the word out, we would appreciate that. So there's plenty of them up front, and we'll look forward. It's an open function. Everyone's welcome. Alcoholics, Al-Anons, Al-Tots, Al-Teens. It's just a plain old whoopee party, really. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. And newcomers, you're the reason why we're here. Is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? Could we just get your first name so we could welcome you? Anybody at all? Anybody new to the area?
Paris from Greensboro.
Paris?
Welcome.
Morgan, I apologize for your permission.
Hey, Morgan.
Welcome. Right on. Okay, there's literature available over there. Please see a home group member if you'd like to purchase a book. We sell them at cost. Cost is written inside the book. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And if you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we'll be up here at the table after the meeting. Please come up and chat with us. Let's see. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank this wonderful panel? And we'll also ask your help with cleaning up. What we essentially have to do with the chairs that you're sitting in is get six or eight of them around these tables, some of them around the back tables, and the rest of them will get stacked. So Jill's raising her hand back there. She'll point you in the right direction. So if we could just get a little bit of help with that, that'd be awesome. Let's see, all are invited and encouraged after we clean up to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, a little boutique Mexican place on 22nd and Colonial. So everybody's welcome to come to that as well. And may I please have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, nice and loud. Steve.
Hi, everybody. My name is Steve, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and do in us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. Thanks. So we circle up for the Lord's Prayer.
Amen.